Hey there, everyone. Welcome to this fourth and last episode, unfortunately, where we try to help you in learning about Git here on Learn Live, where we will share a couple of interesting topics and mainly focusing on GitHub and VS Code this time. So we're going to step a little bit away from the ones who joined in any of the previous sessions we did here talking about Git. Where now we're going to step away from the command line integration and moving on to VS Code, one of the prime tools we're going to use as a developer, maybe as a DevOps engineer. And for the ones who were not here in the previous sessions, my name is Peter, joining in from Belgium for now, an Azure technical trainer here at Microsoft. And I'm super honored and very excited to announce my colleague, presenter for today, John Papa. Hey, John, how's it going? Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be presenting this with you. You've done many of these now, and this is my first Learn Live. I'm a principal cloud advocate with Microsoft. If those of you don't know me, you can find me up on Twitter at the address here on the screen, John_Papa. And Peter, if I understand it correctly, we have gone through, you have gone through all the Git command line stuff. So today is all about VS Code with Git, right?
Yeah, that's right. Now, maybe just as a little reminder, and I know this is like edition 4, and somehow it seems like we only talked about Git only yesterday. But in fact, it's actually, it started about 3 weeks ago where we introduced Git, like really starting from the basics. That was on April 26th. For the ones who missed it, we have all the recordings available on Learn Live. And if you're following the Microsoft Dev channel on YouTube, you could also watch them there again. After that, we talked about collaboration, where the first session was mainly I'm like working in my little cubicle just on my own, creating some code and running some check-ins, commits. And then obviously we expanded it, talking about collaboration. And then in the session last week, we expanded with other really cool Git features, discussing branching and merging. Now for today's session again, we're going to step away from the Git command. The assumption is that the ones who joined us before, you already know the Git commands. We talked about the Learn module. I hope that some of you are actually checking in, going through the exercise. And today we're going to mainly use the graphical interface using GitHub and using code, but a lot of the examples that we used in the command line will somehow be familiar, but you don't have to memorize them. That's really good. Now, again, if you missed any of the previous sessions, you could start at aka.ms/learn-git-live. And just as a reminder, this is a live session. So you picked up that I'm presenting from Belgium. And what about you, John? What's your location?
I'm in sunny Orlando, Florida, just outside of Disney World area.
That sounds nice. Well, for me, it's like 11 p.m., but perfectly fine, full of energy, like always, when I'm presenting and specifically on Learn Live, because I really like that live interaction. I would say to the audience that's already here, let us know where you're checking in from. Obviously, if you do have any questions, feel free to let us know. If you're new to VS Code or you're already a super expert user and you want to share some interesting tips and tricks. Always nice to see that popping up on the chat as well. And just let us know, keep the interaction going. We're here for probably a bit more than 75 minutes. And as long as you're here, we're going to stay here as well. So looking forward to get some feedback there. Now, just as another reminder, besides having the opportunity to send questions, let us know how you're doing. If you're already using Git, if you're using GitHub, if you're using VS Code, always nice to know. But in the end, the main purpose, I would say, of Learn Live is presenting some exciting videos, helping you picking up some new technologies in a somehow fun way. But in the end, it's still about learning, right? So most of the information we're going to use today, at least for the first half, is coming from another Learn module, one of the close to 2,000 different modules we have in meantime. And you can follow along where the first part is the presentation where you can follow along on the Learn module. And the second part, for the ones who are already familiar with the Learn Live concept, you know that we're going to spice it up with a couple of exercises and turning them into some live demos. And you can follow along using another short link, aka.ms/learn-git-vs-code with dashes in between the keywords. And feel free to again, follow along if you got any questions. If you're stuck, let us know. And John, why don't you kick it up from here on the second part of the session?
Yeah, so after we go through the first part, which we go through VS Code and GitHub and how the integration works, we're also going to go through what it's like to contribute to an open source project up on GitHub. So this will cover a little bit of the best practices, and we'll actually walk through creating this stuff together. So anybody can do it. Should be a lot of fun.
So we can do this together? That's what you mean?
Absolutely.
Way cool.
All right. So with that, let's start sharing some ideas about how we can use these tools. And the big two tools we're going to use today are a web browser, so we can get the GitHub, and the other tool is Visual Studio Code. So Visual Studio Code is a lightweight free coding editor that Microsoft, our employer, makes and software developers around the world use. Now, just because it's free doesn't mean, you know, everyone should run out and get this. I was one of those people who for years was changing my coding editor. And when Visual Studio Code first came out, I started giving it a test drive and it really helped me along. The big things I looked for were that it's really fast to load, fast to use, it's free. And the extension model really makes it amazing because while there may not be a feature built into it that you want, there's a bunch of extensions, as we're going to show today, which really light it up. And one of the big extensions we're going to show is GitHub's extension for VS Code. And as we know, GitHub is a version control source system if you've gone through this series. So one of the keys for today is the problems that we're going to address. Now imagine that you are starting to contribute to a project up on GitHub. There's a lot of steps that you normally have to go through. You're going to get a copy of your repository locally. And even getting that copy locally might involve several steps. Peter, every time you want to clone a repository, I mean, there's several ways to do it. What's the first thing you do?
Using VS Code and clicking around for now.
Yeah, that's because it's easy, right? I mean, before VS Code, we had to use like command line tools to do this or go between the browser and the command line and back and forth. So you get this copy locally and then you got to browse all the code and the history up on the GitHub website. And you want to figure out what the context is for why was this code change made? Why was that made? Who made it? How long ago was it? And all this stuff is a lot of context switching. Not about you, Peter, but it drives me nuts having to go between the browser and other tools.
Yeah, no, makes sense. And but again, I already talked and obviously I presented the first session on command line, but when we discussed about like presenting these four sessions, I was like, why should we go through like the Git and command line? Because is there actually anybody still doing it, right? Once you're so familiar in using VS Code, I'm like, nobody's going to do it. But the interesting thing is that actually a lot of our customers and partners, based on feedback in the chat, were actually telling us that they're heavily relying on it. So I think it's like the best of both worlds. If the VS Code interface GitHub integration is not helping you out, feel free to check back in comment line. So nothing's wrong with learning the basics, I would say.
Absolutely. I mean, knowing the tools to make things easier and knowing the command line both are really great. I certainly use a little of each, but to be honest, I'm more leaning towards VS Code these days.
Cool. So what you're saying is that it's actually possible that by the end of this session, so let's say in the next 70 something minutes, that our audience should actually know like most of how to get started integrating GitHub and VS Code together?
Absolutely. There's like five or six commands I use every day, and that's like 90% of what you need to know, I think.
Sounds cool. I'm looking forward to that already. But let's maybe start with, starting with the starting point, I would say. So we talked about VS Code, it's a tool. And while you were talking about all the cool stuff in VS Code, I actually checked the website and it looks pretty easy. By the way, the website for the ones who never used it before and never installed it, again, if you want to follow along, feel free to do so. And you could go to code.visualstudio.com. Let me quickly switch open my browser. There we go. This is, by the way, the Learn module for the ones who've never seen Learn before. If you go to that short link we mentioned earlier, you could literally follow along what we're going to talk about. And from here, it's always like partly a lesson, partly an exercise where you can get some hands-on experience. For this one, there's no real Azure account needed like what we did in the previous sessions, using that Azure Cloud Shell to actually guide you through, but you don't have to do that anymore. It's all running from your local machine. Now, I wanted to send you to this website. So what I did while John was talking about all the cool stuff between VS Code and GitHub and trying to pull this over and not remembering command line anymore, it's super convenient. So something I didn't really know is that you have the exact same code interface, whether you're using Linux, macOS, or Windows. I'm using Windows. Are you using Windows, or are you more like a Mac boy, Mac fan?
I'm a macOS person these days, absolutely. Awesome.
So we can even do the same demos on different operating systems. That's even better. Talk about integration. I think it's another benefit. But from here, it's really as convenient as going to the download section or downloading it from here. Apparently, there's a stable build. And I can imagine that you can participate in some preview builds, which I'm not going to do for now because I don't want to blow up my demos for the session. But it should be pretty convenient. The other nice thing that I discovered is that you don't need admin permissions on your local machine to install it, which could make it a bit convenient in corporate environments. On the other side, if you're responsible for publishing software, you go like, wait a minute, I don't want my users to publish software on corporate machines without admin permissions. You could still distribute the code install files using your traditional software deployment system. And from there, the next step is signing in. Now, why do you need to sign in? Literally like any other, I would say, decent web application, where we're going to store source code and do a lot of other magic that we already did in previous Git demos. It means that you need to identify who you are. Now, we're going to walk you through a couple of scenarios, but there's actually quite a lot of different ways to identify, authorize, and authenticate yourself in using a GitHub project. Sometimes you're going to clone, like what John already mentioned, you're going to clone a project. You get a copy of it and you can start working. From there, you're going to collaborate. So literally following the pace that we used in the previous sessions. Every now and then, you're going to start from your local machine and then uploading, committing changes, pushing them into a project. And that's where you really need to identify who you are. So you're going to start with creating a GitHub account. I don't have a live demo on that one because I already have my account. It's as easy as going to www.github.com. And the first thing it's going to ask you is like, can you please identify yourself? Now, if you just want to look around, because a lot of the source code you're going to find on there is open sourced, which means that you don't really need to identify who you are. But in the second part of the session, you're going to find out that like contributing to open source is actually worthwhile, where you can literally help the open source community. And is that something you're doing, John?
I am. And, you know, it's a really good thing for folks to get into. And there's easy ways to slide in, but we won't give away all the magic. We're going to go in the second half.
Obviously not. Now, you're going to see that, again, we're mainly talking about the integration between VS Code, our DevOps environment, and GitHub, where we're going to store our source control and making commits, making changes again, anything we already talked about in previous sessions, but now just using those two tools. And although the authentication could be a little bit complex, depending a bit how you want to use it, you could log on with a GitHub account. You could log on with SSH keys if you're coming from a Linux or macOS. But one of the biggest benefits is that you do have the Visual Code integration and technically making use of that to handle your authentication. So again, once you created your account, it's actually super convenient. You have your account in GitHub. You can close the browser. You don't need it open anymore. And from there, you're going to do everything from VS Code. And something that you already mentioned, John, is that you don't want to flip over from like the browser back to code, from the browser back to code, from code back to browser. And technically, you don't really have to do that anymore. It's all like really integrated. And again, for the audience, that's what we're going to show you. So one thing I noticed is that once you have your VS Code up and running, and you got your GitHub account, the only thing you need to do is literally hooking the two worlds together. And there's an account option in VS Code. You open your browser window. Out of the VS Code, you define your permissions. And from there, you literally identify who you are, and you can take it away.
You know, one of the really powerful things we mentioned, Peter, about VS Code is how you can use all the extensions with VS Code. So what's cool about this is the product doesn't keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. VS Code's actually very small and fast, but we can add in different extensions to augment what's happening. So what we're doing here is you can access your VS Code, you can access GitHub through VS Code with a bunch of extensions. Now there's a feature in this, which we're going to show you in the demo in just a moment, where you go and you set up which extensions are trusted. This is so certain information about logging in from GitHub to VS Code can work for you. So you'll see a screen like this as we go through the demo that actually shows you, okay, here's our GitHub pull request, for example, for the extension. Let's go ahead and get this permissions so we can access the information and log in. We'll go through that in the demo a little bit later, though, Peter, won't we?
I guess so, yeah.
And then we're also going to talk about the features of the GitHub extension inside of VS Code. Now, what things can you do? Well, let's talk about the most common ones. You're going to be able to clone your repositories, search for repositories that you created, or even look at things like create pull requests, go access pull requests, check them out locally, look at the issues, even find issues or pull requests assigned to you, which is really fantastic if you work on a large project at your company or an open source, because then you can say, only show me the issues that were assigned to me so I can just work on those as opposed to the entire list. So we're going to look at the built-in features as they come up next year. You want to take it away, Peter?
Yeah, sounds way too easy, but you already know, and I hope I can share that same excitement to our audience. So, yeah, like you mentioned, I love it where you're like announcing demos, but then shifting them over to me where I actually have to do all the work. But what we're going to do here is literally what we just talked about. So, again, we already have a GitHub account. We installed VS Code on our local machine. And from there, the next step is building up that integration, signing in. And in short, it's hooking into the extensions. For the ones who don't know, if it's the first time you're using VS Code, again, we do have the chat integration. If you got any questions, if you got any cool stories that you want to share, good or bad, feel free to let us know. If you're struggling with something, I think this is the best way to let us know as well. And more than happy to give you some feedback on how to avoid any of those challenges in the future. So briefly, what I'm going to do is building up that integration. I have my GitHub account. I got my VS Code installed. And from there, I'm going through the extensions, where an extension is, I would say, really what makes VS Code even more awesome than it already is. Today, we're mainly going to use extensions for GitHub, but there's an extension pretty much for everything. If you're working with Docker containers, with Kubernetes, with Terraform templates, Bicep, if anyone is into infrastructure as code, could be Terraform ARM templates. Our newer way of working, Bicep, we briefly touched on it in previous sessions as well. You got extensions for all those little pieces of magic that makes your day-to-day work in GitHub and in VS Code even more enjoyable. So enough talking for now, I would say. Let me switch to my code environment. And by the way, I installed a little theme. What is a theme? It's where you can customize your look and feel. So I know some DevOps engineers, they like a dark mode, but it's a little bit harder for presenting. So we switch typically to like a light mode. The one I'm using is another extension actually published last year at a .NET conference where they announced .NET 5, and it's reflecting that interesting purple where for me, like 11 in the evening, it's like making my eyes a little bit more quiet, I would say, and making it super convenient to work in this layout, yeah, pretty much the whole day. So let's start with extensions. So there's this little spot up here called extensions. You can find the same in the menu, but you'll figure out once you start using code, you're going to make it pretty convenient and finding it from there. And once you start opening up that extension pane, you're going to see that it's like showing a huge amount of extensions. There's another way you can find them. You go back to that same visualstudio.com website where you downloaded code in the first place, and you could search for marketplace extensions over there. And it's literally a super long collection. I never really looked how many we do offer, but it's amazing. Provided by Microsoft, provided by vendors, overall provided by community. So from here, you start searching for GitHub, and you're going to find that a lot of them are, I would say, official ones coming from GitHub, and other ones are coming from Microsoft employees, coming from MVPs, Microsoft trainers, again, partners, overall community. They're literally contributing to the success of the VS Code environment. So one of the tools John was talking about is this GitHub pull request. So you select it, you install it. Again, to speed up the demo a little bit, I already have it on my machine. If you like some of the GitHub main colors that you find on the GitHub website, there's a theme for it. And then, for example, this one is offering similar integrations, but it's not offered by GitHub as an official one. But nothing blocks you. It doesn't mean that if it's not coming from the official source, that it's not good enough. So a lot of community work and effort has been put into it. But let's focus on the first one.
So, Peter, if I could pause you for a moment, you mentioned GitHub as an official source. Mm-hmm. Can you point out real quick to everybody how they know that it's from GitHub versus some other place?
Oh, yeah, sure. So for each and every plugin or extension, I should say, it always mentions the source. So up here, it says GitHub. Up here, it says GitHub. And easy said, at least for the list we're having here on screen, this would not be from GitHub unless this person actually didn't check it out, is maybe working for GitHub or Microsoft. That would still be considered as an official source. So that's how you can identify it.
And it's perfectly fine to use an extension from another person. I mean, I've got my own extensions that I've published, for example. But in this case, if you're looking for the right one, the big key is looking for something that's published by GitHub, right?
Mm-hmm. And then, well, the other reference I would say is obviously like the amount of downloads. It's not always like a guarantee for success, but it shouldn't be a surprise that the more downloads you have with next to that a pretty good ranking, it typically means that it's actually working as it should be, or at least the features that are provided by the extension are actually doing what it needs to do. And then in the middle, you can find some details, like what is the functionality I'm going to get out of installing this extension and really enriching, making your VS Code, again, even more awesome than it already was. So I installed this pull request extension. And from there, I went to my account option down here, where now it says two, and I'll show you in a little bit larger view what's behind this. So again, it's the first time you install that extension, it's going to ask you to authenticate, where my GitHub user is PETender for anyone. If you want to contribute to some of my repos projects, we'll guide you through some scenarios later on how to do that. And once I have this GitHub pull requests and issues, that's the extension we installed. The only thing I need to do is signing in, where it's going to redirect me to the GitHub in the browser. Makes sense. It's like GitHub validating who I am. And obviously, I need to authorize. And that's pretty much all that I need to do. It's going to read out some personal user data. I would say don't freak out. What it's trying to read out, it's literally telling you, like, I want to know who you are, reading out your email address. Why? Because later on, if we're going to like run commits, you already might remember from previous sessions that you somehow need to identify who you are. And that's going to make it so much easier in following up, like who you are, who pushed commits. And authorizing, providing my password. Do I remember my password? Good question.
1, 2, 3, 4, right?
No, I'm even sure that GitHub is not accepting it as, oh, why is it so hard to type a password and talking at the same time? Just give me a second. That should do it. There we go. Success. Site is trying to open code. Cool. So that's literally what John was talking about, right? Where you start with code, you go to the browser, and then you go back to code. So little piece of magic. Do I want to open an extension? It's coming from Git. Just a warning for the audience, just click open without reading what's actually happening in the backend, validating that it's coming from a safe source. It's VS Code and GitHub authentication. Sounds good. And that's basically everything we need to do. I'm not going to move on with GitHub Codespaces. It's another extension I already had on my machine, but that's not relevant for the demo. But that's literally all it takes. So now we have this really cool, nice integration.
And that's just a one-time thing, right, Peter?
It's a one-time thing. Yeah, I signed out to literally go to the demo again to make sure that I could show you from the start what it actually looked like. And that should be about it, I guess. You're going to add something into it, John, and maybe covering a little bit on repos and how to publish them?
Oh, I think so. Maybe I'll do something special as we come up through here. So once we log into GitHub, and as Peter mentioned, you do this generally once, and it's been, I don't know, months since the last time I did this, probably since I reinstalled the operating system on my machine over here. So you do it once, you're hooked in, and you're good to go. But after that, we're going to go through and figure out now how you can publish your own repository using VS Code or Visual Studio Code through the extensions. So one of the cool parts is you can just start working. Imagine the scenario. You're on your machine. You're working on code. It's not in GitHub. You get this great idea for a project. You start moving forward. And then suddenly you realize, I need to publish this on GitHub. And maybe I should have gone to GitHub first. How do I do this? So one of the cool things here is you can actually use the extension to publish your project directly from VS Code, which we're going to take a look at.
Sounds way too easy.
It is. We got to make it harder. So at this point, let's say you want to go through publishing. Why isn't this hard? Or why isn't this easy? Think about the steps you have to go through. If you've done this a lot, you probably think this is easy. And easy is relative to everybody. It's always relative to the experience you have. But first, generally what I used to do is, let's say I started coding locally. And then I'd say, oh, I want to put this on GitHub. I'd then go up to GitHub, to the website, to my repo, log in. There's a couple steps there. And then I'd go create a GitHub repo on GitHub.com, enter the name of the repository, and then I'd select the checkboxes that it wants. I'd also want to go back to my machine and run Git init locally, so I've got to figure that out. I have to add a remote endpoint. What's that? That's the name of basically the URL so my local machine can figure out where is it on GitHub. Okay. I have to specify the items that I want to publish to GitHub, because why is that important? If you're like me, you've at least done this once where you have some kind of secrets file locally and you accidentally published to a GitHub repo. Well, that's not good, right? Like, let's not go there.
Don't do that. You should know really better than that. Come on.
And then you got to figure out and start Googling, how do I get rid of that off of GitHub? And it's no, don't want to go there. So the first thing I do is I specify a gitignore file, and which ignores files. So basically, let's say I had a file locally called .env for environments, pretty common, and I've got some passwords in it for a database. So locally, that's great. I don't want it in GitHub, though, so anybody can grab my password. So the first thing I would do is set up a gitignore file locally, and that tells GitHub to stop and don't take this file. After that, then I have to stage my files, which is just a fancy way of saying identify the files that you want to push up. And then we add a commit message. Why? Because we're going to be committing, basically means commit it up to GitHub. So we have to add a message for what were we doing with this set of changes for these files. And then finally, we actually push it from our machine up to the repository in the browser. And not about you, but I've already forgotten half the steps I just said.
Yeah, you lost me there.
Yep. But the good news is there's a better way, and Peter is going to show us.
I'm going to make it so much easier. Well, I'm going to talk about it first, and then you're probably going to show it, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, we need to come to an agreement here, but I'll talk about it. Let's do it this way. I already did that first demo, so you might jump in and show something from your side. I've never seen VS Code on Mac, by the way, so it could be an interesting way to see how it looks and feels. But you talked about publishing. It's like, I don't know, 7, 8, maybe 9 different steps you need to go through. And again, I remember we did all of that in the previous sessions with all the Git comments, and it's I'm not going to say it's a nightmare, but it's just way too hard in my opinion. And just to be clear, there's nothing wrong with it. We don't want to force anyone to like forget all the command line stuff and then move to code and GitHub integration. But hopefully you got this aha moment or even the wow moment. At least that's what I had like 3 years ago. And I'm still using it every single day. So in short, what you can do, there's a couple of different ways to do this. And you're going to find out in John's demo that it's like super, super easy. The first thing after using the VS Code base install, you don't need to deploy any other extensions. It's already source control ready, where you should remember from previous sessions that source control means we're going to interact with our repositories. In this case, using GitHub repos. So you literally open VS Code, you go to that SCM little pane in the extension bar. right on top of it, I think, at least on a Windows machine, but we'll find out. And from there, you can just literally select it. Or another option is using our comment palette. And the comment palette is like the top menu with a couple of keywords, a lot of capabilities, because every now and then, I'm not really, I would say, like a 100% coder. As you find out in my introduction, I'm mainly providing training every single week. But I know a lot of developers and they're not even using a mouse anymore, where it's everything is literally done from like short keys. And that's where that comment palette could become pretty convenient. So you go into VS Code, you select that little bar on the left-hand side, or you can go through the comment palette. Super convenient. A couple of screenshots here, but I'm quite sure that you're all eager to see a first demo coming up from John. So what you do is selecting that little source control icon with a couple of animations in the middle that John will talk about, or using that top menu, opening the comment palette. And depending on the extension, based on the extensions you already have, it's literally injecting a lot of comment integration where you can just literally search for him. You can click around, but I think, John, you need to convince them with another demo.
Tell I think that sounds like a grand idea. So this next demo is based on the same exercise that Peter started with, and we're going to build on it. So I'm going to go and create my own set of code, my own stuff locally, and then we're going to use the tools that Peter just explained and walk through VS Code to publish my code in a new repository up on GitHub through Visual Studio Code. So the basic steps here, we're going to create a project. We're going to create a README file. Everyone should always have that. We're going to create a .env file that we're going to have for development. We're going to publish things up to GitHub. Then we're going to go look at it at GitHub. And we'll take a look at this gitignore file that gets created for us to kind of find out what that's all about.
To make sure that you're not uploading secrets.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a very secretive person, so we're not going to do that.
My encrypted password .txt.
So I'm going to take the control here and share my screen. And let's see how this goes. And Peter, you can let me know as soon as it's there.
It's there.
Awesome. So I'm just going to show you first. The first step in this whole thing is to create a folder on your local machine. And I've got a little terminal window. It's a tiny one up here. And we're just going to use it for a minute. And I'll blow it up super big so you can see what's going on. Now, I like to put things into a folder. I have a folder called Play on my computer because that's what we're going to do. Peter and I are going to play with you and create some new projects. So first, let's create a new folder in here. I'm going to use the command, real old command line. You can do this through Finder on a Mac or Explorer on Windows as well, if you wanted to do that. And we'll call this the MS Learn Demo. And now if I go into that, you'll see if I do a quick list, there's nothing in it. But what I could do is get rid of the terminal, go over to the VS Code Insiders. I'm actually using the, I guess it's unstable, Peter. It's the Insiders version of VS Code, which is actually a daily download from the VS Code team. And the reason I use this is because it gives you new features every day. And it's actually the version the VS Code team uses to write VS Code. So it's kind of like Inception. So I use this version because I get new features faster. And I recommend everyone else try it too. So what I can do is go up to here to File, Open, or hit Command O on my machine. And then what I can do is go down to my Play folder and MS Learn Demo, select Open. And there is my folder. You'll notice I'll get rid of the welcome screen. There's nothing here. I don't know about you, but an empty screen kind of scares me sometimes, Peter. It's like, what do I do next? So there's a couple things here we want to do. I want to create a file called README. And there's a few ways to do this. First, I can right-click over on the left in the Explorer and choose New File. Or I could choose File, New File. Or if you're a command line person, you can hit Command N. You can see the command up in the menu. And here's a good tip for everybody. If you want to learn how to use the keyboard with VS Code faster, when you're going to the File menu and you see these commands, always look to the right and see what is that command. So I can hit Command N, and it opens up a new file for me. So the file is not yet saved, and I want to save this as README. So I can hit Command S or Control S, or I can come up here and press Save in the File menu. Let's do that, and we'll call this README.md. And the convention is to put README in capital letters. And then it'll appear over on the left as a README file. And there we go. Now I'm looking at the instructions from the Learn module, and it says I should create a README file with this content in it. So I just copied and pasted that, and real quick, there's my README file. Now, something you want to remember is to save this file. Now, I'm going to give you another tip that's not in the Learn module, which I really recommend. Up under File, you'll notice I have Autosave turned on. Autosave is exactly what you think. It automatically saves your files, which protects you from things like this. Let's say you put something really, really important right there. Now, because I have Autosave on, it's now saved. But if I didn't, I'd have to press Save first. So all that would then be saved for me automatically. So do you use autosave, Peter?
I'm pretty sure I do. I already forgot that I enabled it, but I'm pretty sure it's there.
It is nice, though.
Yeah, I would have lost a lot of code already.
Yeah, and we're going to create a second file, Peter, because, hey, one's not enough. And this time, I'm going to go up and do file new from over here. And I'll do file new. In this one, I'm going to paste in the contents before we save the file. It's going to be my environment file with my connection string for my database, which please don't let that be your connection string. And now I'm going to hit Command S to save it. And this time I'm going to type .env.development. Now, when I do a dot file, it's going to actually prompt me to say, did you really mean to do that? Because those are like reserved file names. Yes, I did, because this is my secrets file. So now you're going to see .env development, and you're going to see the README. And just to make it easier, I'm going to drag the .env development side by side so we can see both files at once inside of VS Code. Nice little feature. All right, now that we have all of this, we saved everything, and we've got our README, we've got our development file. The next step is to publish this up to GitHub. Now over on the left, you're going to see a bunch of little icons here. And what this one right here is, with the little dots and the lines, is source control. We're going to click on that, and it's giving me two commands. I can initialize my repository, which means locally, or I can publish it to GitHub, which is also going to do the init for my repository. So we're going to click on publish to GitHub. Now it's going to ask me, do I want a private or public repository? So I'm going to make this public so you can all see it too as we go through this, and that's what we recommend. You can do private if you don't want others to get to it yet. And then it's going to ask me which of these files should be included. Now, notice I said I have secrets and database connection strings in the environment file. I don't want that to be included. So I'm going to uncheck that right here. And then I'm going to click OK. So by doing this, a couple things are going to happen. First, you can start seeing in the bottom left, there was a little circle spinning around. In the upper left, the source control had a progress bar. And in the bottom right, just to make it complete, to make you look in all three directions here, there's a message, which my Teams window is blocking. It says it successfully published, thankfully, up to my repository. Now, do you want to see it? Do you want to press the button with me, Peter?
Go ahead. I trust you.
All right, I'll press the button. And I'll drag this window over from my browser. And here is johnpapa/mslearndemo. And we can see we've got my really, really important README file. And we can also see there's a gitignore. So let's go look back in our project and click on the upper left. That's the Explorer. And notice we have a third file. So if I click on that third file, it added .env.development. And it did this because we specifically told it, don't push this file up. So it created the gitignore file, which is a convention with GitHub. To say, don't look at these, don't push them up. And that file does get pushed automatically, but it says, this is the pattern of file. So anything with the file name of .env development, which is this one over here, will stay local, but not up into GitHub for you. What do you think, Peter? Not too bad?
No, pretty cool. Actually, there's a question from the audience. And well, you showed us like two different files. You excluded one in like the gitignore. But the question is, do we have to specify the files that you want to include in the repo one by one? Or is that SCM plugin smart enough to detect like any changes in the folder? Like, let's say you're creating, I don't know, some kind of application source code with like 300 files in there in 200 different folders. Is it intelligent enough to detect it? Or do you literally need to click all of them or like Control A How does that work?
That's a really good question. And let me answer this in two parts. So when you're first pushing your repository, which is what we were doing here, VS Code will ask you specifically for which files do you want to include, and it selects them all by default. So when you're first doing it, you probably don't have 500 files, hopefully. I mean, you should do this before you get there, I would recommend.
Yep.
In this case, we had two. And that's why I initially unselected or deselected one of them. I took out the check mark. But let's say we fast forward now and I've got 500 files, which is very common in subfolders. What this tool will do, if you look over here on the left, notice what happens as I change my README. If I say, hello, Peter, with a lowercase p, now, once autosave kicks in, you'll see over on the left, there's a little one in a blue badge over the source control right here. And that one blue is showing us the changes. And we're going to learn more about what those changes do as we get a little further along inside of this demo. So to answer your question, yes, VS Code will track all the changes for you.
Nice. I like it. Let's see how good we can switch back to Belgium from Florida. Taking a plane would probably take us a little while, but...
Yeah, I don't even know if we can fly yet, so...
It's under discussion, I think. And it seems like the U.S. can probably visit Europe faster than Europeans can visit the U.S., but we're not going to talk about it for now.
We want to stay positive today.
Yeah, let's try to do that. So, thanks for the demo. Great stuff. And in the meantime, we answered that question. So let us know how it arrived on the other side of the world. And for the ones who forgot about it, again, you can follow along. You can go through the demos and the exercise out of the Learn module. And we're still here for another 40-something minutes, I guess. So feel free to let us know how you're doing. If you got any questions, more than happy to go through them and answer them. But let's move on a little bit and talking about cloning repositories. So what is cloning? It's literally like sharing everything you're working on with your peers, could be your colleagues, could be a public project like the one you created, sharing it with the rest of the world, and then maybe influencing that open source model a little bit. So now imagine that you want to contribute to another project. So up till now in the demos, we talked about something that you as an individual, you create John's little project and uploading it. But maybe you're on the other side of the GitHub platform and you want to start contributing to it. So one of the first actions you need to take is cloning it from that online GitHub repo. Again, could be public, could be a private. Like, we're not just sharing code with the rest of the world. If it's like our internal, I don't know, corporate business application, you could still use GitHub, but maybe I would recommend moving it into a private type of a repository. So there's a couple of things you can do here. So you're going to contribute, which means, again, we're going to share code. It's already up and available in our GitHub repository, and we're going to bring this to our local machine. Or the other way around, once we're going to make some changes and we're going to upload them again, that's literally what we're talking about here. So in short, little reminder, bringing back, I don't know, stepping back in time, back to the history, like 2-3 weeks back, where we initially talked about Git on your local machine. And in the second session, we talked about literally contributing. So when you clone a repository from GitHub, it's literally creating a full copy, everything that's in that repository. It's literally synchronizing everything to your local machine. Now, if you use that Git command line, you needed to provide your GitHub credentials using that Git set command at the beginning, Git setup, where you provided your user.name and the user.email to identify who you were. Next to that, you needed to define that remote URL. And from there, running like git clone pointing to that URL, what we called remote endpoint before. And from there, it's literally copying everything to your local machine. But we could probably optimize this a little bit more. Can you talk a little bit about it, John?
Yeah, totally possible. One of the nice things is this will look like the screenshot here will look like what I showed a few moments ago in the demo. It's a little bit different. So we still have two blue buttons, but this time the key blue button is we can clone a repository. So when you open up VS Code by itself, one of the options in the Explorer is, hey, what do you want to do? It's trying to help you with that blank screen syndrome I mentioned. So you can click on the clone repository button and automatically will ask you which repository would you like to clone? And it can help you find it. If you don't have this, you can just go over into the file menu and look up the view menu and look at Explorer, and then you could do clone repository as well. You can also use the command palette to get here. So there's always multiple ways. My old reliable in VS Code is the command palette, which the way you open the command palette is hitting the F1 key, whether it's Mac or Windows. Works on both machines. So that's super cool to do. And once you do that, you can then git clone your repo right from Visual Studio Code. But now what? All right, so we clone a repo, which effectively means pulling it down off of the internet. Now you want to contribute to it. So a lot of times you're going to want to start with a project to look at what files are there and what's in the history. But one of the great things about the extensions is you can look at the timeline of what's happened to this file. Notice a screenshot here. In the timeline, we can see the initial README, the oldest ones in the bottom, shows us here that we've got this commit for the README. We've got our initial commit from Burke Holland, a good friend of ours, works at Microsoft. So Burke made a change for the initial commit, and then he went in and updated the README with a second commit. So you can actually look at the timeline, when it happened, who did it, and you can actually click on it to see what happened. This is incredibly helpful when you want to look at file changes, especially when you're doing diffs, right, Peter?
I'm pretty sure.
So what's a diff?
I was just going to ask, I forgot about it. Remind me, what's a diff?
So what's the diff? It sounds like slang for something my kids would say to me, you know, Dad, what's the diff? Well, the diff in VS Code stands for difference. And you're going to look at the before and the after of a commit. So here what we're showing, it's not important to read the actual file, but on the left-hand side and the right-hand side are the same file, but with the diff shown. So on the left is the original version of the file. On the right is the changes that were made, which is currently there. It's the difference. So it's a convenient way to show you side by side what's been added, changed, or removed. And on the right-hand side in this one, we can see it's in green. I'm colorblind, so I'm hoping that's green. I believe that's actually adding content to the file. So it'll show you in green or in red to allow you to see what's added or changed, which is super easy to look at in this particular way. It's better, in my opinion, than having to go back up to the browser, go look at the history, and try to figure out what changed here. Instead, we can choose VS Code to show it.
Yeah, running this from command line. I'm never going to do that again.
I remember those days. Whew.
Well, you said it's easy, so I'm going to challenge myself and switching to the next demo, and I just want to try it out. This seems like too easy, almost impossible to be that easy. So I just, you know, I like to convince anyone at midnight my time to just convince you that it's really that easy. I'm going to show you. So in short, again, what we're going to do here is connecting my VS Code environment, cloning a new repository from GitHub, so it's already there. I'm going to clone it to my local machine, and I'm going to inspect what our friend Burke was actually doing. And again, showing you how easy and straightforward it can be. So let me first close up a couple of things here. And one of the other interesting ways to do that is, you don't need to close code and opening it up again and starting all over. You could literally just open a new window. And what this is going to do is keeping the old one live and at the same time starting a new one. Now you could go wait a minute, that's actually pretty interesting. But what happens if I close one of them? So maybe you don't need that last window in the back anymore because that's still there from my previous demo. I don't need it anymore. Obviously, it's just like any other window. On Windows or Mac, you could literally move it around, doing some cool stuff with it. So I'm going to close this one, where now I'm just in my new window. Let's see if I can maximize it without any annoying pop-ups, apparently. Ooh, close. There we go. Because otherwise, I don't have my comment palette option here anymore that John was talking about. But I could go back to our source control, because again, source control, that's referring to everything we stored in our repositories, in this case, GitHub. And the other option is up here, it's already there. And from here, command palette, you can start. I want to do some cloning where, cool, it's Git clone. Why is it not GitHub in this case? Because it's relying on the good old Git in the backend. So we're going to do source control, and we're going to clone a repository. Confirming, and it's going to ask me, like, what repository do you want me to use? Now, as you can see again in the previous demo, my first demo at least, I identified myself as being PEtender. That's my GitHub account. And it automatically assumes, like, hey, you got all your projects, all your repos in GitHub. So probably most logical step is that you just want to clone them to your local machine. Now, luckily, I already did that for most of my projects. So let's check back what Burke has been working on last couple of days or weeks. And it's somewhere public on our Microsoft docs, and it's a learn module. And I don't know Burke that well, but I know he's pretty good in Python, so I guess it's Python. And let's try this one, products. There we go. So next it's going to ask me, like, select a folder on your local machine. So let's create something on my local disk. I got OneDrive, like my personal backup system, but let's keep it easy for now, although that could actually work. But you probably don't really need a backup because you already have all the files in GitHub. So that would be like a waste of cloud space. And we're going to call this one the Python products. That's the name. Now, the nice thing is that the GitHub integration with code is not forcing you to, like, reuse the name for the folder to be the same name as the name of the GitHub repo. So that's another interesting one. Every now and then it could become a little bit more complex to, like, remember what is the actual local file name or the folder name that I'm using, like my local repo, if you want, and how it reflects. We're now from here. Let's see if I'm fast enough. The cloning was even faster than I could zoom in, where it was cloning and it asked me, like, do you want to open it up? And even better, do you want to open it up in a new window? So I'm going to keep it easy for now because I just showed you how to open a new window. But technically what it allows you to do is literally hopping around from one window, one project to another. And all the data is in here. So we can see up here, this is the repository coming from my local machine. It's literally Explorer on my local machine. And we can see some additional information here. So let's check back in that README file, because I think that's where one of the changes happened. Or let's check back what happened. And what we already talked about before, you saw the screenshot. In the meantime, it's a little bit more outdated what Burke was doing at that moment in time. But we could see that, like any good practice, we talked about it before, Burke created this repo, creating that README file, and from there committing some changes. And from here, what we talked about before, you can see that it started from like a blank README file and eventually adding some changes. And that's really how convenient it can be. The other nice thing I discovered is that, remember in session 2, we talked about collaboration. Session 3, last week, we talked about branching. And you can immediately follow along, like, I cloned a repo, and this is the branch I'm using. And the full history, there's only like two items in this one, just for the sake of the demo, not making it too complex. But if you got like a whole team working on it, you got 500 commits happening every week, you could literally go back and validating like what has been changed. So again, all this is cool. I like it way too much instead of relying on the command line. You already know that. Good. Now, I think we're a bit, about a little bit more than halfway through. So what we typically do in a Learn Live session is validating how well the audience is following along. And I just checked, there's for now no questions coming in. That means that or everybody's already up to date, or our demos are so amazing and they're probably just literally fell on the ground that everything is just working as it should be without memorizing any command line. But let's check back how well they are up to date on what we've been talking about. So let's start with the first question here. What would be the best way to prevent files from being published to GitHub? So from your local machine, publishing them to GitHub. And you want to prevent files from publishing. So you have your local project, you're going to upload it. So when everything works out fine, the question shows up on your end of the world and you can participate. Let us know in the chat. Just answer if it's A, B, C, or D. I mean, it shouldn't be harder than this. But John, why not helping our audience a little bit? Like, let me look into your brain, at least a little GitHub part, what we talked about up till now, and let me know what you would go for.
Let's do it. First of all, I'm going to let everybody know that probably like you, I'm not a big fan of tests. So let's find out how well we can do together on this quiz. Now, I always try to read the question carefully because I'm one of those people who reads questions and then usually misses key words. How about you, Peter?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm a Microsoft certified trainer and I'm trying to help our customers and partners every single week. And obviously, there's a lot of questions coming up like, yeah, but what's the exam like? And one of the first things I tell them, if you want to optimize your passing rate, make sure that you read the question carefully. That's like almost half of the reason why you fail or pass.
So I'm gonna start there and take our advice. What's the best way to prevent files from being published to GitHub when you're publishing a new project that has not yet been initialized with Git? And I'm thinking the key here is interesting. When I'm publishing, so Peter and I showed in the demo a few minutes ago, we're publishing a project. I think it was my demo where I created some code locally and then I published by clicking the blue button on the left. And then if I remember correctly, it popped up a box asking me some questions. So let's read these. Now, with that context, let's go through these. I'm going to take and start at the bottom because I see one that's just doesn't seem right to me. Cancel the selection? Wait a minute. Cancel the selection of items. Well, maybe there's items on that list. That could be it. What about C? Let's go to C now. Add a gitignore file during publishing. Peter, were we even offered the option of adding a gitignore file after we published?
I don't remember, but I was checking feedback from our audience, so I might have missed it.
Yeah, it didn't ask me if I wanted to do that. So I'm going to say no. Right-click the files and add to gitignore. That is a thing you can do. I happen to know that. But again, we're publishing already, so that's too late. So it's not B either. Add a gitignore file to your project. Again, that's something you could do, but again, I think the key word here is when you're publishing a new project. So let's go back to D. Cancel the selection of items. We did get asked for items we could cancel that you don't want to publish, and I didn't want to publish my environment file during publishing. So I'm going to go with D.
Cool. Let's see what the audience thinks. So we actually got 50-50 for answer A. And the other half is going for option D as well. So nobody's going for B or C. Little drum roll. And
there's nothing wrong with it, right, Peter? I mean, you can add a gitignore file to your project, but that not while you're publishing. It's already in process.
Yeah. I like it. When I saw the question, my thing was like, yeah, it's going to be A. I mean, gitignore, you talked about it. We joked about it. Like, don't store your, this is my encrypted password.txt. So just move it into that gitignore.
Yeah,
but that's not really helping you during publishing. So it's actually even more interesting where you got the benefit of using that gitignore file. But on top of that, you could still select the files that you want to publish. There's part of the repo, but you don't want to publish them yet because maybe, I don't know, you got lunchtime and after lunch you want to validate. So indeed, best option here is answer D.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, we got a second question coming in.
Yep. So on this one, it's asking, how do we set the origin remote for the repository that you clone from VS Code? So, Peter, do you think VS Code sets it automatically? Maybe?
I would hope so, man. I would hope so. I mean, with all the cool stuff we talked about so far, that would be even more amazing.
And then the second option is, do we select add origin when prompted after you clone? I don't remember you doing that at all. So I'm going to say no to B. Run git remote add origin. That's a terminal command line thing. And after the clone finishes, I mean, that's something we could do, but again, I didn't see you do that. So I'm going to say it's not B or C. I like A and D because the word automatically is in both those answers. Now, I'm going to let you guess. I got it down to A and D. Which one do you think it is?
What a... The tricky part here is that, yeah, that automatic thing really, like, amazes me, I would say, and I would really love it. But we talked about Git, we talked about GitHub primarily, and we talked about VS Code. So I actually have no idea, like, who's, like, the trigger, who's the brain behind this little piece of magic. So I'm going to check what the audience tells, first of all, before exposing what I think it is.
Ah.
So we got a full vote for the first answer. Answer A, VS Code is doing all the magic for you. So I'm going to be super positive for our participants in the audience, and I'm just going to follow them. I know this doesn't work.
And we did spend a lot of time in VS Code, right? I mean,
it would be pretty amazing. Let's see what comes up. Cool. Looks like Visual Studio Code is defining it automatically for us, making our life as DevOps engineers way too easy. Thanks for the ones who participated. Little applause for the ones who had the correct answer. Since all of you went for option A, thanks for participating. We got a couple more questions coming up later on. But I would say let's move on and talk about some other stuff.
Yeah, Peter, I think most of our audience has followed along that pretty well there. And we're at halftime of our presentation. We're about an hour into what we're doing. We've got about a half hour left for just give you all a time check where we are. But this second half is actually a little bit shorter. This one is less about the tools and more about how do you contribute to open source projects up on GitHub. So Peter and I are going to kind of walk through this module and have a discussion with you about how you can think about doing this and what you can do. So let's move along. And the open source community, or OSS, you hear it a lot, you can rely heavily on community people for long-term sustainability. So basically, what does that mean? All these projects out there, someone creates them or a team of people, and then it requires the community to kind of help create issues, identify problems, to help update with pull requests. A pull request is just a magical, crazy word. First time I heard it, I'm like, what does that even mean? Request somebody to pull my arm or something? It means you want somebody to automatically take your code and merge it into the project, basically make a fix or refactor. So in the spirit of open source, what you might do is say, you know what? I've been using this library for a while. Maybe I want to contribute back to it. And during the demo that we're going to get to in a minute, I'm going to randomly select a repository that Peter has authored, and I'm going to choose to contribute back to some code that Peter has written. Now, what he chooses to do with that, we will find out and see.
If you're contributing, I'm just accepting it.
I appreciate that. And one of the keys here is identifying how you can help or where you can help. One of the worst parts of open source, not even worse, it's just scary, quite frankly. It's kind of like that blank screen syndrome, is where do you go? Like, how do you know what to help with? Oh my gosh, the first time I went to the Angular repository about a decade ago, I was like, I want to contribute to this. I like this repository. I like these people. Where do I even start? And it can be a little scary, but it doesn't have to be. And this is a place for all of us to contribute to. And we can contribute with a single character that's a change to a file with like a typo, or we can contribute with actually adding code and multiple unit tests if we want to repository. So there's lots of ways we can make this happen. So I mentioned some of the ideas here. Here's some really simple ways you can get started. First, it's a lot easier than you might think it is if you're familiar with the project in the community. So find something you know. I know Peter. He's done not too scary to me, maybe a little sometimes. So I'm going to go to one of his repos, and I'm going to go ahead and look there in one of his projects. And then I'm going to look at the README file. One of the first things I do is always read the README. And sometimes you see incorrect words or spellings, or a hyperlink is broken, or there's just a little typo somewhere. And it's really easy to see some of those. And a lot of times, people like Peter on open source will be very welcoming of you making that change. So that's the kind of thing I recommend people look for the first time they go in. What about you, Peter?
No, I totally agree. But I think one of the main challenges is, like, how do you know what's available? And I actually discovered an interesting one where it shouldn't be a surprise that most of the open source examples that come to mind are probably starting GitHub. And GitHub actually provides a built-in search capability. You go to the GitHub portal, and on top there's a search. And literally, you can search for anything. If you're like really good in machine learning, up here in the screenshot, but again, it doesn't need to be a Microsoft project. It doesn't need to be a GitHub-related project. It's basically anything. If you're into IoT, if you're into overall Azure, if you're into, I don't know, any other technology you could think of, just search for it, open it up, and then you're going to find out, like in this case, machine learning. I know machine learning is a pretty hot topic, but close to 200 million repositories on GitHub. And I'm quite sure that this screenshot is a little bit outdated because we started working on the sessions like more than 6-7 weeks back. So it's probably even more than 200. So the next thing you can do is obviously narrowing it down a little bit. So just an example again here. So you dive into the highest level, you're going to search for machine learning. And from there, you start looking around, maybe exploring the README file, like John mentioned already. And based on that, you can literally identify like, oh, this looks like an interesting project. Or maybe it's interesting up to a level where you can start contributing, because there's a lot of open source content available. Could be sample files, could be source code snippets, could be documentation. Pretty much anything you find on GitHub, I would say. And it might be a little bit overwhelming. I mean, 200 million just for that one single search. And why not using that topic, drilling down, narrowing search, and literally finding not just what looks interesting, but also finding where you can contribute.
Sounds good, Peter. And one of the things we mentioned is familiarizing yourself with an open source or OSS project is important. So every community is a little bit different, but there's some basic conventions that will help everybody familiarize yourselves with those projects. Look for these four files in your project. So when you go into a project, look for the license file, first of all. So license file describes what the license is and what the rules are for basically using this open source project, whether it's an MIT license or Apache or whatever it happens to be. The README file is the main file that you're going to look at. It usually serves a couple main purposes. What is the project, which is quite frankly really important, especially if you have a project called something like Peacock, which I do. How does somebody know what a peacock is, right? Besides the bird. So in the README, it should explain what is this? Why would someone want to use it? Those are really important things. And then explain things like, how do you install it? If it's installation, where do you find it? How do you get started with it? And maybe some basic documentation. The contributing file is contributing, shows you how you can actually make contributions to the project. So based upon who the open source community or authors are, for that project, they'll outline in the contributing file what guidelines they want you to follow. Like, you can contribute, but once you do this, please make sure you follow this format. Or if you're going to make a pull request, please first do this. For example, something I like in contributing for my projects is to ask people to first search the issues in the pull request to see, is the same thing you're asking for already being asked by somebody else? If so, use that. And then the fourth file is a code of conduct. I find this super important in this day and age. It's effectively the way of what behaviors will be tolerated and are encouraged on the platform. It's a little scary using open source, and I've said that a few times. That's because you're putting yourself out there and you're telling somebody, here's all my code. I don't know about you, but sharing my code with the world sometimes opens me up for a little bit of criticism. So I'm asking, you know, be nice, get to the point. Remember there's people behind all the code, and treat people the way you want to be treated. So in the code of conduct, we'll kind of explain how you're expected to behave up there. And I always look for that in projects that I'm going to contribute to. The next part of this, Peter, is to identify what tasks to work on. And one of the things I like to do is if you go over to the issues or pull requests, you can see labels. In the labels, there's some common things like good first issue. This is great for people who are just starting. It's good for your first issue to try to tackle. Or help wanted means that the owners of this repo are saying, we want your help. Well, I often do this for docs. And then the next step of this is to sponsor a project. This is another thing you can do which a lot of GitHub projects will have a sponsor button at the top, which you can see here in the screenshot. And this will allow you, if you really like something, a lot of open source, they don't get paid to do this, and to keep things moving, some of these people do it in their spare time. I know I like to help contribute to some of this, and you can contribute money to it. It's totally optional, but it's a nice way to give back to people who really put some great code out there.
So
I think it's time to talk about contributing.
Yeah, I actually got a question on that, because, I mean, up till now, you literally set the scene about, like, what is open source? What's the mindset? What's the concept? Next to that, you talked about how GitHub actually helps you and really stimulates, like, that open source model. So I think we need to talk a little bit about, like, what does it mean to actually contribute to such an open source project, right?
Yeah, so, and Peter, just to kind of set the stage for everybody, you're going to walk through some of these steps, but then we're going to go through a demo together on how this works. And I know we've got about 20 minutes left, so I want to make sure we leave time for the live parts too.
Cool. I got a message there. Sounds good. So we started from the search, like, what is available on GitHub? What is out of this massive pool of open source projects? You start looking for something where you can contribute. And what it means is you identify where you can literally be of help. Now, the next step is preparing yourself to contribute, which means how can I communicate? What are the technical skills that I need? Next to that, you're going to probably clone it to your local machine, integrating pull requests. And remember, we talked about pull requests in the previous session, where it's no guarantee for success, I would say, where you could be like super enthusiastic, like, oh, I got an answer to that question that we talked about in the previous slide. And you're going to suggest your answer, but it's still up to the open source repository or the project owner or multiple owners to actually accept your answer. So don't get, I would say, like, too disencouraged. Like, I went through this whole process. I'm like super enthusiastic about contributing, but they're not accepting it. And important there is, again, communication. I know it's all online and we've been using the virtual world a lot more than we used to do, but it's still like following a couple of guidelines. Communicate, let the stakeholders know what you're working on. Tell them that you got something where you could help. You can literally contribute. Look at SNEs, which means that you could pick up that question, but maybe somebody else was already working on that. Or the other one is where you could find that linked pull request, which means that somebody's already working on it. So the SNE is typically like some responsible. He's like taking ownership to or fix it or maybe just do follow up. And he might be looking for your contribution. But if you already see a linked pull request, it means that somebody else was already working on that. So I would say try not to like become too frustrated if you cannot really find a project right away. Looking around, start small, start with something that could help you. And then once you've found a project, we go back to what John showed you in the previous demo. We're going to create that pull request. You clone it to your local machine. From there, you're going to make changes. And eventually, we're going to like offer a suggestion. Like, this is my contribution, and I want to offer it to you. Can you please accept it? That's literally what a pull request is all about. Now, there's a whole process. Again, John warned us a little bit about time. We want to make sure that you got the whole process. You can see it in action. But before that, let's quickly show you like what it looks like to just make sure that you have a really good understanding, that the demo is not going way too fast and go like, wait a minute, this is like not going anymore. So what you're going to do is cloning to your local machine. You're going to make changes. You're going to commit the changes. You integrate that pull request and you're going to offer to the other side, like, this is my recommendation, my suggestion, my answer. And from there, they go through a couple of validation checks, which could be a lot of different things. In our Microsoft docs, we're going through grammar. We're going through a lot of keywords. We're probably validating the technical suggestions you offer. So it could be a mix between automation and a little bit of manual reviews. And then hopefully once everything is worked out fine, you can move on. Or maybe you can control yourself like, well, I want to offer this, but I don't want to use it in a full official answer yet using that pull request, but squeezing it into a draft pull request. Now, the main difference is that the draft pull request cannot be merged anymore until it's marked ready for review, which means that somebody's like literally looking over again, could be automated, could be manual. And it's not like a full commit out of a pull request, if you want. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, those drafts are nice because the draft means that it protects people from you create a pull request and you didn't, you're not quite ready for it to be merged. So in the past, we used to write words in big capital letters, do not merge, but it doesn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
So at this point, we need to respond to comments. And it's really worth saying at this point, Peter and I talked quite a bit about the way we communicate on GitHub is important. Just like any social media or any other online site, it's easy to quickly just go, Peter, what's wrong with you? You wrote this code and it's terrible and it ruined my day.
Don't do that.
don't do that. Yeah. No. It's very easy to do that. Or a lot of times the things that we type, we type it in a kind way, but when you read it back, it doesn't always come off like that. So really important to be respectful in our exchanges and to follow the code of conduct. I always like to make sure that after I type a message, that I read it over before I press save or commit to it to send off to Peter, as we're going to do, as I edit his repo, because maybe that person reads it differently than I intended it. So try to be as open and friendly as you want, because again, it's a community. It's not, Peter, you did something wrong, I'm going to ruin your day.
Now, there's a question coming up since we talked about like comments and reflecting commits. So there's actually a question from our audience. Is there any like best practice, some guidance on what kind of format or convention we need to use where John in the audience at least, is positioning the 7 rules of a great Git commit message? I love that question because it comes up in every session we did the last 3 weeks. And I know there's a lot of like buzz around it, like what would be a good commit message? For me personally, I try to limit it to like 50 characters. That's like literally following the Git best practice as well. By the way, if you do this out of GitHub in the portal, it's literally telling you like, hey, watch out. We got some best practice that the commit message should be clear, brief, not too overwhelming, because you're going to use it as some kind of timeline, what I showed you in the demo, literally scrolling through the project history and finding out what happened. So don't make it too long, too complex, but be clear, be brief on this is like the change that happened. But maybe we could squeeze that in the next demo again. I think it's about that we're going to walk through the demo, because we might run out of time, and that would be sad if we cannot complete the full demo in time.
Absolutely. Let's click over the demo, and I'm going to share my screen over here. We'll go back. Peter, can you see my Visual Studio code?
Yes, I can see it.
Okay. So I'm going to go over. Again. I'm going to go right to Peter's repository. I picked out a repository where Peter has my first SWA deployment. I think that means static web apps, because that's a product that just went general availability last week and I'm deeply involved in. So I want to check this out. So here we've got his first repo up there. Now, let's say I look at his README and I'm like, this README could use a lot more content. So what I could do is go over to the issues and I could be really mean to Peter and say, why are you such a terrible person? Why don't you add more to your README? Or I could say, you know what? I'm going to go fix this myself. I'm going to try to contribute back. So that's what I'm going to choose. And right here, you see this green button on my screen called code. If I drop that down, you're going to get a couple of options. There's an HTTPS option, SSH, or GitHub CLI. So you can use any of these tools to clone the repo. And that's if I owned it. Now, I don't own this repo, so I'm not going to do that quite yet. First, I'm going to use a command in the upper right called fork. Now, besides being something you eat with, a fork is how you can basically take a copy of Peter's repository and put it on your own organization. I'm going to choose John Papa. And now notice it's forking ptender, my first SWA deployment. It should only take a few seconds. And in the upper left, you'll see it says John Papa. I've got my own repo of this. It's a fork of Peter's. So now at this point, I've got my own copy and I can make my own code. So I'm going to choose code here, and I'm going to choose HTTPS, and I can click on this URL if I'd like to, right there. That will copy it to my clipboard. Now, I could go use terminal, but instead, let's go back into VS Code right here, and I'm going to use the command palette. I'm going to hit F1, and I'm going to open up here to say clone. We're going to do a git clone. I want to clone my own repo. I'm going to choose the repository up here to clone from GitHub. So I'm going to put that up into the URL. And it's going to ask me, where do you want to put this? I'm going to put it in my play folder. And we'll create a new folder here just for fun. I'm going to call it the fun folder. Now I'm going to select my repository location. It's cloning it. And it says, would you like to add it to the workspace or would you like to open it? I'm going to open this one right here. So it's going to refresh it inside VS Code. And now we can see there's the files. There's my README. That was the same README he had up on the website. And I'm going to make a change. I'm going to say something like, okay, install instructions. Let's imagine that those installation instructions have a couple steps. Like first, get the code. And these are just fake instructions. I'm having a little hard time typing the word code. There we go. Then after that, we're going to say, enjoy the code. And three, delete the code. These are really fake instructions. And let's say I wanted to save this for him. Now, what I could do is create my own branch. So again, I'm going to open up inside the command palette with F1. I'm going to choose here to git checkout to create a branch. And in this case, I'm going to create a branch called, we'll do something up here. We'll say refactor, just giving it a prefix. This is going to be README. I'm then going to use the command palette again to commit my changes and say added more README. And then I'm going to use the command palette again, F1 a lot, to say push. Now it's going to ask me if I want to create this in my upstream. Upstream basically means what's up in the cloud. So I'm going to tell it to go ahead and do that. And I can push it to mine or I can push it to Peter's. So what I can do here is say go right to the upstream, but I don't have permissions to that. So instead, I'm going to go right here to the origin. It's going to push it. And then when it's done, it says, hey, would you like to create a pull request for this? Now I could do it right from here by clicking on this button and say, from this branch, go ahead and create a pull request for Peter against his main branch. And I can look at the changes. I can say, you really want to do this. And a smiley face. Everyone loves smiley faces, or you can get really fancy and put emojis in there. And I'm going to choose create. Now, once I do that, you can see I've got my pull request right here, but I want to switch over to you, Peter, to let you share. See what it looks like on your end, because it's now in your hands.
Good. Let's see what's happening. And before I switch screens, I'm quickly going to check if my browser is still open. I was checking some feedback from the audience, but you worked on my first deployment, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just going to refresh my browser while it's refreshing. Let me switch back to my screen.
It was my first SWA deployment, I believe, is the repo.
Yep, that's the one. It's still open. Way cool.
And look at that. There's a number one up there in pull requests.
From here, way cool. Let's have a look. You added more stuff to the README file. I can see that it's you, John Papa, making some changes to workflows awaiting approval. That's way cool. The branch has changed. I accept it because I like your comments. And from here, since I'm in charge, I could merge the pull requests. And it's really that easy. That's all we need to do. Super convenient collaboration, everything we talked about in previous sessions. But just having a look at time, I think it's about literally time to wrap up. So
yeah, we got about 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it looks pretty good, but we got a super important message coming up, even more important than everything we talked about in the last 85 minutes. So hold on tight, we're almost there. So a little wrap up. What we did is introducing you to VS Code, talking about GitHub, how those two worlds are nicely working together. So you discovered how collaboration works, how the project cloning was working. We talked about open source integration, helping, literally building up, leveraging on that open source community model. Remember that you need to be polite. you need to contribute on the project where you can be successful as well. And if you want to take it even up to the next level, you could also look into that GitHub project sponsorship. So you're not sponsoring GitHub, just to be clear. You're really helping the open source community. And then from there, after you find out, like, this is what I can work on, just start creating your first contribution, submit a pull request similar to what we showed you in the demo. Hopefully you get accepted. I'm not saying hopefully in a way that it's never gonna happen, but again, just watch out what you're contributing to. Make sure that you can be successful, that you can help the project being successful. That's most important. Now, from here, last couple of words. We talked about Git 4 weeks, what, 3 weeks back. Next, we talked about collaboration, talked about branching. All the Git commands are still available. The sessions are there. I hope you enjoyed it, what we did with VS Code integration together with GitHub. Again, not stepping away, not pushing you away from Git command line at all, but literally showing you how it can be a super exciting tool. What's the important message, ladies and gentlemen? It's Build Week coming up next week. Make sure you register if you're not registered already. If you are, let us know in the chat. It's always interesting to know, like, what's the audience going to be like? What are your interesting sessions? If you're looking for sessions, it's next week, May 25, 26, 27. It's all virtual for now, so super easy. Go to that Build website. If you don't want to watch all the sessions, but like the most important ones, maybe at least for now, you could also check back in your trusted environment, being the Learn Live that you already followed along the last couple of weeks, and we're going to stream some Build sessions. There's no way we can show you all sessions, so just a couple of examples. It's going from identity to IoT, static web apps, what we used in our last demo as well, Microsoft Graph integration, Power Apps integration. I used to know that Build was like a developer-only conference, but now it's literally overall Microsoft Cloud, on-prem, hybrid, whatever you name it, whatever you want it, it's all going to happen on the Build conference. I think with that, we got like 2 minutes left. Let us know in the chat what you liked about the session. If you still got any questions, remember, it's all part of that Learn online module, aka.ms/learn-git-vs-code. That's the URL you needed to use. There's one question coming in. Let's see, John, if you could help me out here. So there's a question. When I like a project on GitHub, I usually give it a star and make a fork. Is there a problem with making a fork and never giving a pull request?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, maybe you make a fork because you just want to try a local copy for yourself and you want to explore it and you want to have it your own. The nice thing about making a fork is you grab a moment in time of what that repository looks like. So absolutely, you don't have to make a pull request everything you fork. In fact, I don't. But in case you want to, you can always fork it and then make a pull request. So no, there are no expectations up there. You do you.
And I also think that, like, when you use that fork scenario, it's giving you access to all the source files and the source code. And it could actually help you, like, drilling in, like, the code. Maybe it's like some sample app that you want to run yourself. That could also help you in figuring out, like, oh, based on the README file and based on the questions, it looks like a cool project. But maybe once you've looked into the fork, it's maybe a bit too challenging. Or the other way around, where you were not convinced about going through the README, but once you saw the inside by using that fork, you go like, wait, I want to contribute. I'm going to fire up a pull request here.
Hey, Peter, you know what time it is?
I think it's time they're going to kick us off the platform.
I think it is. I want to tell everybody from both Peter and I, thank you so much for the entire series. And thank you for Learn Live for supporting us. And please check us out at Build.
Let's do so. I'm going to thank you all as well. I was here at the start 3 weeks back. I was super enthusiastic convincing you about Git command line with all the cool stuff that comes in with Git. I hope you followed along, you enjoyed it, you learned from it, and thank you for being here. Learn Life is not going away. We're going to be here. I have no real view on any sessions I'm going to present in the next coming weeks or months, but I enjoyed it so much, even in close to after midnight for me, but nothing to worry about. I get so excited about this, so I'm probably going to stay awake for another hour before I fall asleep. Thanks for being here. Thank you, John, for helping me out with all the cool demos, your contributions to the presentations as well. And look forward to do a lot more of these here on Learn Live. Thank you so much and have a nice day.
Have a great day.